You're listening to a News Report podcast from TheBody.com, the Internet's most comprehensive HIV/AIDS resource.
I'm Miles Helfand, Managing Editor of TheBody.com. It's been more than a year since the United States approved a new HIV medication, and 4 long years since we witnessed the birth of a whole new class of HIV meds. But today, that's all changed. On August 6th, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave the green light to Maraviroc, which will be known by the brand name Selzentry. Maraviroc is the first in a new class of HIV meds known as CCR5 inhibitors. Maraviroc works in a fundamentally different way from every HIV med that has come before it. And before you can even take it, you'll have to take a special blood test to determine whether Maraviroc will even work against your HIV. So, which HIV-positive people stand to benefit the most from Maraviroc? How can you know if Maraviroc's a good fit for you? To get the answer to these questions, I spoke by phone with Dr. Joel Gallant, a professor of medicine at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and one of the leading HIV specialists in the United States. I asked Dr. Gallant to break it down for us.
Well, this is an interesting question, and unfortunately, because of the way it works, we can't get away completely from the technical stuff. This drug is really unique among other HIV drugs in that it's not going to work for everybody's virus. And that's not because of resistance, but because of what we call tropism. So as I mentioned before, some virus gets in through the CCR5 co-receptor, and that virus would be blocked by Maraviroc. Some virus gets in through the CXCR4 receptor, and that virus would not be blocked by Maraviroc. And then you can have virus that is either a mixture of the two or individual virus particles that can get in through both co-receptors. Now, the only people who are going to benefit from Maraviroc are people who have whose viral population is entirely composed of virus that gets in through CCR5. We call that R5 virus. And to know that you have R5 virus, you have to do a test called a tropism assay. So this is something new. We've never had a drug before where you had to do a special test just to find out if that drug was going to work. As it turns out, people generally start out with R5 virus, but as things progress, as their CD4 declines or as they get more experience with HIV drugs, there it comes a time when they begin to get some X4 tropic virus and they have a mixture of the two. And so people who are going to benefit from this drug are the ones who haven't had that shift yet in tropism. They still have R5 tropic virus. It gets tricky because, of course, as I said, you're most likely to have R5 tropic virus when you have a fairly high CD4 or you haven't been treated with very many drugs before. But those are also the people who have lots of good options among the drugs we already have, and they're probably not the ones who are going to want to use this drug right away. So the people who are most likely to want to use the drug are the people who were like the ones that were in the trial that got it approved, the Motivate trials. And those are people who already had a lot of resistance to other classes of drugs. But about half of those people don't qualify for the drug because they have our X4 tropic virus. So it's a bit of a catch-22, and that's what makes this drug exciting, but also complex. There's a layer of complexity that we don't have with the other drugs.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds that way. Is there any reason then, given that, well, what's the percent? You said about half of people who have a lot of drug resistance, the people that were involved in the trials on Maraviroc, were unable to take the drug because they didn't have that CCR5 tropic virus.
Right.
What's the percentage for people who haven't been on treatment yet?
If you haven't been on treatment, now first let me just say we don't know whether it has more to do with your CD4 cell count or how much treatment experience you have. But regardless, if you're let's say you're somebody who's got a reasonably good CD4 count, you've never been on treatment, then your chances of having R5 virus and being a candidate for this drug would be more like 85% or so. Of course, there's a lot of variation in between, just depending on how long you've been infected and that kind of thing. But you can see it makes a big difference.
Yeah, but now this drug, it's only approved for people that who are drug resistant, right?
Right, and for now, that's all you'd really want to, the only type of person you'd want to use it in. After all, this is a new class of drugs. It acts on the immune system rather than directly on the virus, so there are, you know, long-term safety issues we don't understand yet. You have to do this expensive test before you can use it. So it's not, a drug that we would want to rush to use early on until we have longer-term data. Especially when we have so many great options for people who are starting therapy for the first time that have been, you know, tried and true and we've used over the years. So even though there are theoretical reasons why you'd want to use it early, practically it wouldn't make sense to do that until we have more studies.
Okay, so tell me about this expensive test then that people who are heavily drug resistant would need to take before they take Maraviroc.
Yeah. Well, anybody would need to take it, but of course, mostly it'll be heavily treatment-experienced patients. It's called the generic name is just called a tropism assay, but right now there's just one version of it. It's called the Trofile assay is the brand name from Monogram Biosciences. It's a test that simply looks at your virus and tells you there are three possible options. It could be that you have R5 virus, that you have X4 virus, or that you have what we call dual or mixed virus. Now, the reason that we call it dual or mixed virus is because the test can't tell the difference between a single virus particle that can get in through both co-receptors or a mixture of R5 and X4 tropic virus. So we just call it dual mixed. And very few people have pure X4 virus. So most people are going to either be R5 or they're going to be dual mixed. And so that's what the test tells you. It's a pretty accurate test, but it's kind of like resistance testing in that it can be wrong some of the time. So, for example, in the studies that led to the approval of Maraviroc, everybody had to have the test when they were screening to participate in the study. The people who had dual mixed or X4 virus got excluded from the study, but everybody who had R5 virus was able to enter the study. But then they did one more test on the first day of treatment. And they actually found that about 8% of people there were 8% of the people showed that they had R5 at the time of screening, but at the time of starting the drug, they actually had some X4. And it's probably not because their virus changed, but just because the test, you know, if there's a small amount of X4 present, the test could miss it. So it's a very accurate test, but it's not 100% sensitive, just like a resistance test. If you have a small amount of virus that is atypical, it may not pick that up.
So would a person then, if I've gone through four or five regimens now and I'm looking for a drug that's going to work, would I take the tropism test at the same time I take another resistance test before I switch regimens?
You certainly could. You need both bits of information. So you could do the tropism test and you could do a resistance test and then determine what your next regimen would be based on both results, because you know they're both very important and they're both equally important if you're going to be considering using this drug.
All right. So this drug works mostly on, well, it seems almost exclusively, right, on people who have this R5 tropic virus.
It's not to say that it's the end of the world if you should take it and you actually have dual mixed tropic virus. There had been some concern early on that this could be a real dangerous thing to take this drug or this class of drugs if you have a mixture. And the reason they were worried about that was because we know that people who switch from R5 to X4 virus tend to progress more rapidly after they switch. Their CD4 goes down faster, and the thought was maybe X4 virus is more, you know, it's maybe it's stronger or it's more damaging to the immune system. And the concern was that if you gave Maraviroc to somebody who had dual or mixed tropic virus, you'd suppress all their R5 virus and you'd leave only their X4 virus, which could be more dangerous. And they've now done studies where they've given it to people who had mixed populations and didn't find that bad things happened to them. Their CD4 didn't go down. On the other hand, remember that when you're taking a combination of HIV medications, you need for all of them to work to prevent resistance from developing. And so the risk is that if you took Maraviroc with a dual or mixed population, then the Maraviroc is only treating some of your virus, and that leaves the other virus to, you know, potentially become resistant to the other drugs in your combination. So that's the real safety concern, not so much that it's going to breed this nasty virus.
All right. Well, while we're on the subject of safety, I guess, let's talk side effects, since that's a major concern for anybody who's taking HIV medications. This Maraviroc is a member of a class of drugs that has had a little bit of trouble getting through the development pipeline because of various issues with side effects. And during the lead-in to the drug's approval, there were a lot of concerns raised about different kinds of side effects that it might or might not cause. What does the actual data show on that?
Well, the biggest studies are these two MOTIVATE trials that have hundreds of patients in them. And frankly, the drug looked very well tolerated in those studies. In fact, there really wasn't much of a difference between the people who got Maraviroc and people who got placebo. There had been concerns from an earlier CCR5 study with a drug called Aplaviroc, I don't know how you pronounce it, where there was some serious liver toxicity, and that drug actually got stopped. The development of that drug got stopped, but that doesn't appear to be the case with this drug. There really doesn't appear to be much in the way of liver problems. There had also been some concerns with another CCR5 inhibitor that's in development now, Vicraviroc. They all sound like Flintstones medicine to me, with the rock at the end. But the Vicraviroc study showed that there was a surprising number of cancers in the people who took Vicraviroc. However, the cancers were all different kinds of cancers, so it's kind of hard to say that, you know, it was causing this cancer. And so far, the FDA doesn't feel that, you know, these cancers are necessarily drug-related and has not stopped the studies of this drug. But suffice it to say that hasn't been seen with Maraviroc. So far, it looks good. But, of course, with any drug in a brand new class of drugs with an entirely new mechanism of action, you know, we're going to need to see long-term data to be absolutely certain.
Now, the data that's available so far, how long have people been on the drug?
Well, the MOTIVATE trials that were presented in Los Angeles at the CROI meeting had data up to 24 weeks. Now, there have been earlier studies with longer-term data, but, of course, they have much smaller patient numbers.
Is 24 weeks normal for the amount of time that a drug is studied before it gets approved?
Well, 24 weeks can be used for accelerated approval. Of course, you know, by the time, the data that were presented in Los Angeles were 24-week data, but subsequently, you know, more data have accumulated, and the FDA will undoubtedly have been privy to more data than just what was presented in L.A.
Okay, so liver looks okay. Cancer looks okay. What about some of the problems that have, well, for better or for worse, over the past few years have become very strongly associated, if not in fact, at the very least in the minds of a lot of people with HIV medications, being lipid-related problems, cardiovascular issues, fat changes? Is there any sign that Maraviroc might cause any of those problems?
Well, of course, you know, the fat changes like lipoatrophy, fat loss, take a long time to develop, and you wouldn't necessarily see signs of that this early. Although, as far as lipoatrophy and fat loss, we're pretty convinced right now that this is due to mitochondrial toxicity from the thymidine analogs, AZT and D4T, and really haven't seen it with other drugs and other classes. So there's not really a reason to think that would happen here. In some of the studies there have been of Maraviroc, there has been at least a kind of a suggestion that maybe it could increase cholesterol a little bit. Way too early to say whether that could also cause, you know, fat gain, although there's, you know, a lot of question even today about whether any of the HIV drugs specifically cause fat gain or whether it's sort of a secondary phenomenon due to improved immune status. And improved health, overall health. Maraviroc doesn't appear to be a drug that's going to have a big increase in that kind of risk. There is one side effect that's sort of unique to Maraviroc, at least if you use higher doses than what are going to be used in clinical practice, And that is what's called postural hypotension, which means that when you're lying down and then you suddenly stand up, your blood pressure drops and you get dizzy. And that's seen when you use high doses of this drug. But in the clinical trials, it hasn't been a big problem. And then there were some, you know, suggestion in some of the early studies of maybe a little bit of increase in things like thrush or herpes, but pretty hard to say whether. It certainly wasn't a striking difference between Maraviroc users and placebo users, so it's not something that I'm too concerned about.
So in sum, then, it sounds by and large like things are pretty much looking okay, but it's still sort of, a wait-and-see?
Yeah, I think we have to see, and that's why we're not going to be rushing to use these in people who have other options. You know, it's interesting because this drug is blocking CCR5, which is a part of our immune system, and none of our other HIV drugs do that. They all act on the virus and parts of the viral life cycle, but they're not acting on aspects of our immune system that might be necessary. Fortunately, we actually have a human model of CCR5 depletion. There are people who are genetically lacking in this CCR5 coreceptor. We believe that the reason for that is because, for whatever reason, not having that coreceptor helped to protect people from the bubonic plague during the plague years and the Black Death epidemic during the Middle Ages. And so there was sort of a selection of people who had that deletion, and especially in Northern Europe. And those people seem to live perfectly normal lives without much in the way of medical problems, despite not having that coreceptor. So it gives us at least some reassurance that you can do okay without that coreceptor. But of course, blocking it is different than not having it, and still going to want to see what the long-term data show.
That's right. There was the CCR5 inhibitors made headlines a year or two ago, didn't they? When there was a bit of news about West Nile virus and how people who don't have that CCR5 receptor were more prone to, what was it, having brain-related problems?
Well, yeah, and that's the interesting thing because that is, as far as I know, that's the first human disease that's been associated with having this mutation in CCR5, is that you are more likely to get seriously ill with West Nile virus than you would if you had the CCR5 coreceptor. You're probably aware that not having the CCR5 coreceptor also, in addition to preventing you from dying of the Black Death or the bubonic plague, it also makes you more resistant to HIV infection. So if you're missing the coreceptor entirely, if you're homozygous, meaning you have two deleted genes, two defective genes, then it's pretty hard for you to become HIV positive, to become infected. And if you only have one of the genes that's abnormal, then you can get infected, but you progress more slowly with HIV. So good news, lower HIV risk. Bad news, don't get West Nile virus. And whether that's going to have much to do with the use of the drug is completely unclear. Would Maraviroc make you more likely to get sick from West Nile? We just can't say.
So then what other questions are remaining about Maraviroc?
Well, I think, the main one, of course, is long-term safety and durability of the effect, of course. But I think we are going to see clinical trials of CCR5 inhibitors in treatment-naive people as a first-line therapy. So, that's going to be an important kind of data to get. I guess I would just say that one of the other questions is, how will doctors and other healthcare providers deal with the need to incorporate a new blood test in managing patients? So, HIV is already pretty complicated, and we've got monitoring of CD4 counts, of viral loads, genotypes, phenotypes, virtual phenotypes. Now we've got the HLA-B5701 assay to look for a baclofen hypersensitivity, and now we're throwing in another test that's expensive. It's not very complex in terms of interpreting it, but We're simplifying therapy for people with HIV, but we're making it more complex for healthcare providers. And I don't think that's going to be a big deal for HIV experts, but I do think it continues to make it harder and harder for non-experts to be managing this disease. And I think we need to be aware of that. And to me, it's an argument for why everybody should be cared for by somebody who's an expert in the field.
All right. So then what's the bottom line on Maraviroc? Is it likely to change the way that HIV-positive people are treated?
Well, the MOTIVATE trials show that it's a great drug. I mean, in the right people, it really did well really added something to the background regimen that they were using, and people did much better on it than on placebo. Remember, this is not just placebo. It's placebo plus, the optimized background regimen that we talk about in clinical trials. So it was a great drug, but we have to keep in mind that it was a great drug for that 50 or so percent who were eligible for it. So, it's going to have a more limited niche for, who it can be used in. But for those people, it does look like a good drug, and at least so far, looks to be safe and well tolerated. So I think it's going to offer something for a lot of people, but it's not going to be the answer for everybody.
Well, I guess we'll keep our fingers crossed then.
Yeah.
Dr. Gallant, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Miles.
This has been a news report from thebody.com. The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us at podcasts@thebody.com.